Hello, my name's Tamsin Westhorpe and welcome to Fresh from the Pod Gardening Stories. Have you filled your house with houseplants during the pandemic? I most certainly have. Somebody who has taken houseplant growing to another level is plant guru Tony Le Breton. Now, Tony has filled his Cheltenham home with tropical plants, and some have a value of up to £12,000 per leaf. That is per leaf. He's even given up his spare room and built a greenhouse in there so he can provide the perfect conditions. So if you want to find out more about your monsteras, your crotons, your calatheas, join me as I get top tips from Tony Le Breton. Tony, it's so lovely of you to join me on Fresh from the Pod. I've got so many things to ask you. Yeah, I think we have a shared passion for houseplants, so this is going to be really exciting. Now, I wanted to start. Your normal life, your normal world, is you are a hair and beauty photographer of some standing. So I looked in the mirror before I went on Zoom and thought, oh my God, I've got lockdown hair. This is just dreadful.
I'm not going to judge that.
Oh, thank goodness for that. How has this lockdown and pandemic affected your normal work?
So it's been really difficult for the industry as a whole, actually. We are one of the industries that were hit hardest, and because it contains a lot of people who are self-employed, me being one of them, and there is absolutely no support for anyone who is self-employed earning a certain amount of money. And our industry wasn't allowed to work for the majority of last year. So I was able to work in August and September last year, two months out of the entire year. And right now we can work, but because a lot of salons are closed, you know, the stores are closed that are selling the makeup, the hair products and what have you, no one's shooting at the moment. And there's also a little bit of a fear of doing it because of, you know, negative PR.
Yeah.
So work has, I did cram almost a year's worth of work into 2 months.
Right.
I was really lucky that my clients backdated everything and we went ahead and shot everything. And it was, whereas usually I'd maybe shoot 2 to 3 shoots in a month, because it's not just the shoot day, there's so much planning goes into it, all of the post. So I did 25 shoots in August and about the same in September. So going from doing 2 to 3 to 25 was just exhausting, but it's meant that it's kept me busy for a few months after, and still busy now doing all of the editing, file selects and planning shoots in the future as well. But on that note, there is nothing booked in this year so far. And usually my diary would be booked for the entire year ahead.
Crikey, what an impact. But I mean, I'm wondering whether that is why you have dedicated yourself to houseplants. It's given you a focus. But tell me a bit about how you got hooked into houseplants, because I know you grew up gardening with your grandparents on an allotment. So you've got that bug. But when did the houseplant thing kick in?
So like you said, I grew up gardening before I could even walk, I was helping prick out seeds and planting seeds for my nana's garden. She had the most incredible flower displays, and my granddad had an allotment. And I spent the majority of my childhood there with them and learned everything that I know about gardening from them and from the Victorian Gardener. Like, my favorite TV program was the Victorian Gardener. I love it. So throughout most of my life, the fascination was just with plants, whether they be indoor, outdoor, aquatic plants, whatever. And I've had, along the way, I've had several plant collections, let's say. And the one before this one was a collection of orchids. I had about 100 orchids. And I only lost that collection because I moved out to Thailand. So I suppose the houseplant collection goes back, you know, maybe 8 to 10 years.
Okay.
It was my first houseplant collection. And in my previous home, I had a really big garden, so the majority of plants were outdoors, but I still always had probably, you know, 30, 40 houseplants, which is more than most people, but
yes,
pale in comparison to what it is now. So this one, this particular collection, the majority of the larger plants in here I had in my old house. They just weren't growing like this because it was a medieval cottage with no light whatsoever. So when I moved in here, in fact, this house was bought to house my house plants because I couldn't find a place with a garden that I liked. I thought, okay, next best thing, I'll find a house that will allow me to grow really, really well inside.
On your wonderful Instagram, you can see that you've got a glass ceiling, you've got high ceilings, beams. It's wonderful. There's no stopping you, really. You really can create a jungle in there.
Yeah, it's been incredible. And being in here during lockdown, that's really pushed me to take things to the extreme. And basically, instead of just having houseplants, I've created a garden inside. I mean, right across the back, I have a north-facing window, which I've diffused the light on as well. And across that side, I've basically created what I feel is a herbaceous border. But inside, I have all my plants packed in together, starting at the front, at the ground, and working their way up, mixing all the textures, shapes, sizes of leaves. And it's basically put together how you would put a herbaceous border together. And then looking at things that you'd use in gardening, you know, grouping different plants together to help emphasize different colors and foliage. So it really has taken it to the next level rather than just having houseplants. I've really tried to create a garden inside that I could enjoy.
And how many have you got? Have you actually counted them?
I haven't. And I don't particularly want to because I think a number would make me really consider when I'm buying new plants. But someone asked me the other day, when will you stop? When is enough? Mm. And for me, it's absolutely not a number. It's about when I feel the space is right. There are plants continuously going, new plants coming in. The place morphs, things grow, things change. And that's what's so lovely about creating a garden inside. So it's not a number, but I would say when I can't care for the plants to make them as good as they possibly can, that's when it's enough.
Or when you can't move. I mean, you know, move around your own home.
Well, I've just found a new home, which
Going
to give me. Yeah, so it's going to give me the indoor space like this with the vaulted ceilings and lots of light, but it's also got a big garden. And at the moment, it's all just laid to lawn, but I've already sketched it. I only signed on it 2 days ago. I've already sketched out my kitchen garden where the greenhouse is going. The lawns are coming up, beautiful herbaceous borders just filled with flowers and life. And I'm so excited.
That is brilliant. Can't wait to hear more about that. So is the greenhouse, people listening won't believe this, but this is true. You have a greenhouse in your spare bedroom. Will that be the greenhouse that comes to your new home and go, will it live outside then?
So there's a plan. There's a real plan. When you've got this many plants, and especially the ones in the greenhouse, which are some of them are incredibly, incredibly rare or incredibly expensive, there has to be a real serious plan. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to have an inside greenhouse for the real rare things. And then which is going to be bigger than the one I have here. So when I go, I'm going to have like a month overlap between having this place and that place. I'm going to go and set the greenhouse up, get the heating on, get it all ready. And then in one day, everything will be taken down, put into the greenhouse. And then the next plan is to put a 20-foot greenhouse outside, which will house the majority of my Monstera collection, because that's the genus I'm really fascinated with. And I'm looking to see if I can have a split in the greenhouse to have two climates inside. So I'll have a warmer area and then somewhere a little bit cooler so I can look at getting some more orchids. And obviously so I can also overwinter things and bring things in from the garden that are a little bit more tender as well. So I've got big plans.
Crikey, so moving for you. I mean, seriously, it's quite a challenge, isn't it? Getting those plants from A to B. Are you moving a long way away or not too bad?
Yeah, I'm moving to Northamptonshire. So strangely, it was when we first spoke on the phone and I was just at that viewing.
Oh, wow.
That's the house that I'm getting.
See, there you are. I'm lucky for you. There we are. That's exciting.
You're my lucky charm.
Yeah, that's brilliant. So, but I always worry with houseplants. I'm always saying to people, when you go and buy them, don't just walk out of the store on a cold February day, walk down the street with your houseplant. It's going to go into shock. So you've got to consider all really, that. Yeah. That's going to be challenging. Well, unless you move in the spring, obviously, when it's warmer.
Yeah, so I'm going to be moving within the next month or so. So it is going to be cool, but outside daytime temperatures at the moment are around 12 degrees. So 12 degrees is okay for a short period. I try not to actually heat the room that my house, that the main house plants are in. Obviously, the greenhouse is heated to sort of 28 degrees. But in here, I just don't let it fall below 14 degrees. You're much better off to have them slightly cooler without the dry air rather than have the room really warm and have dry air.
Yeah. I mean, I really suffer here. I think I said to you on the phone, I've got a very old house, very small windows. It's freezing cold or boiling hot, you know, because we light the wood burners. So it's an absolute nightmare. I'm loving when I look on your Instagram and you've moved things around. I am constantly moving my house plants. I think, oh, they're going to be a bit cold in here tonight. And I put them into the kitchen. Oh, gosh, they take over, don't they? They really do. In a lovely way, but
oh, in a really lovely way. And that's the, I think there's, that's really the difference between houseplants and outdoor gardening, is that they're in our homes. So people build, you know, a real fondness towards particular plants. And also they're in a, they tend to just be in a pot on their own, which makes them more of an individual.
Yeah.
So people really personify their houseplants.
No, I think they're rather special. Gosh, how exciting for you. That's going to be amazing. Now, I wanted to ask you, why have you got this passion for Monstera? I mean, it's a brilliant houseplant, but what was the sort of start of that obsession?
So initially, it was just your bog standard Monstera deliciosa, which, first of all, I think is incredibly underrated, because when it's grown properly in the right conditions, the fenestrations the leaves can get are just spectacular. And the leaves are just glossy and thick and green. And it's such an easy plant as well. It really is so forgiving for people. And then I think once I joined Instagram, which is the beginning of this year, I started to notice there were people who really focused on particular genus of plants. And before I'd done orchids, but when it comes to aroids, houseplants, I didn't notice that so much. And when I started seeing other Monstera, I was just fascinated with the variety of them. Their morphology and the way they grow is just incredibly fascinating, because the young plants, the immature plants, are so unbelievably different. Some of them will be, you know, like a 10p piece shingling flat against a log, and they get to a certain height or a certain level of maturity, and these leaves turn from 10p to 5 foot across, and they then fenestrate. They just morph into these completely unrecognizable plants. And there's actually a really not a lot known about Monstera. There is a revision currently of the species going on, and a lot of things we thought maybe were Monstera or part of a certain species of Monstera are actually not, and other things now are Monstera that weren't. And there are so many new species being found that it was something that excited me, and something not many other people were doing. In fact, when I started collecting the Monstera, there was no one else around, certainly no one else in the UK or Europe, who was really focused on Monstera. Most people are more fascinated with things like anthuriums, because they just are spectacular instantly to look at, or philodendrons. But Monstera are just a little bit more understated, and I find that more fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, that is one of the plants that actually does grow really well in my house. So everything you say is true. They are very easy, you know, and they will cope with quite a lot. So your dream is to hold a national collection of them, isn't it?
It really is, yeah. So I currently will have the national collection of Monstera, as in I will have more species than anyone else. Mm-hmm. But there are certain guidelines that you've got to follow with registering a national collection. I've looked into it, and there's a few things that I want to do, and there's also a few species just for me that I would like to have first before registering it as a national collection. I've just got a few, and this is really pushing me to source and find these other species. So Fingers crossed it happens. And I think having this new greenhouse and more space will really help, because Monstera take up a lot of room.
Yeah,
you haven't chosen the smallest house guest there. But I mean, where do you go to find really, really unusual species? Where would you start? I mean, I wouldn't know where to start on that.
So it's something that I've just had to figure out as I went along. And there really are very few people that have any of these plants in the UK. So some of my plants come from botanists who are also interested. I swap a lot with botanists, botanical gardens, other collectors around the world. And the majority of the time you're receiving a piece of stem with a node on and no roots. And that's the challenge, to then grow it. And I just love it. I really do. And it's really plant collecting or indoor gardening, whatever you want to call it right now, is if you want to source these things, you've just got to spend some real time getting to know people, you know, showing people that you can care for these plants.
Yeah.
And that when they go to you, you're not just going to chop them up and sell them on. You have a real passion for the species, for looking after them. But some of these plants, it's so important for them to be in private collections, as long as they're being taken from the wild responsibly and under license. It's really important that we share them around the world to protect these things, because a lot of them come from places in South America. And as we know, South America in particular is really, really suffering.
So talking about buying plants and selling plants, you have a plant. This is how you sort of got into the newspapers and, you know, everyone got excited about what you were doing, is you have a plant that sells for thousands of pounds. Am I right?
Yeah, you are. Well, I have a few plants that do that, but this one in particular sells for around £12,000 per node. So incredibly, incredibly expensive.
And what's it called?
So actually, it's not a Monstera. Mm-hmm. It's actually a Raphidophora. So this one is Raphidophora tetrasperma variegata. So people will be able to buy this plant or the non-variegated version of it in their local garden centre. So it's known as mini Monstera or sometimes just Raphidophora tetrasperma. But this one in particular has a rare genetic mutation, which means it's variegated. And it means it's an incredibly rare plant, but not scientifically, as in it's not going to really excite science. It excites the houseplant market and people who collect rare plants or plants to invest in.
And have people actually bought them from you? Have you sold any?
Yeah, I've sold. So they're on pre-order.
Yeah.
So you can't get them right away. So the plant has to grow. So I've taken 8 to 10 pre-orders on them. And I probably could have sold a lot more, but I won't take any more until these ones have been cut and propagated and what have you.
And are they, I mean, I'll put my order in obviously later for three.
Oh, I've got two reserved for you.
Yeah, good. But who's buying them? Is it sort of national, you know, botanic gardens, or is it other botanists? Who would spend that money?
So botanists tend to not be interested in the sort of hype that comes around these rare plants and the large amounts of money. And to a point, I agree that species plants really should just be shared and enjoyed by people. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to sort of variegation and mutations, then it excites the rare houseplant market, who tend to be people who just collect. They're not necessarily gardeners or even that interested in plants outside of indoor plants.
Yeah.
They just collect and they want to have something that no one else has. And they also see the value in having it and then propagating it and selling it themselves.
Yeah. Crikey. I mean, who would have thought?
It's a brilliant investment.
It really is. But how do you price something like that? It's like, you know, you're looking at a painting. I've done a painting. I think it's wonderful. I could just pull a figure out of the sky and say, well, it's worth 40,000. How do you price that?
I mean, it's going to sound really ridiculous, but there is a certain part of it that is that.
Yeah.
You've just got to look at prices for other things in the market. So mm-hmm. for instance, recently, this was nothing to do with me, but there was a Monstera which had a genetic mutation. It was a Monstera deliciosa, but it had a type of variegation which people like to call mint. And it sold for almost £30,000 for a small cutting of it online.
Wow.
Unbelievable. So what I would say is that I think I could have put any price on it and someone would have paid it.
So, well, I mean, that is such an exciting story. And I suppose it's like the snowdrop world. You can buy snowdrops for like ridiculous amount of money. And in the you know, back in the day when tulips were worth crazy money. And it's a lovely story. I mean, why shouldn't plants be that valuable? Really, you beg the question, why shouldn't they? If you go and buy a puppy at the moment, they cost thousands of pounds. So, you know, for some people, these plants are their pet, aren't they? They are, you know, a massive part of their life.
Yeah, and I think in general, horticulture, there's not a lot of money in horticulture. And it's such a shame because, you know, plants, we wouldn't be here without plants. They're incredibly important. And if now there is some way for horticulture to make money, that money can be filtered down to go into research. It can go into sending people out into the wild. It can go into so many different things. And it could also mean that it will attract more people into horticulture because there is money in it.
And I think the lockdown has done, you know, one good thing is it's got people gardening, and actually it's got people growing houseplants, and it's gone mad, hasn't it? Absolutely mad. Do you, because we had a brief conversation about this on the phone, I was saying, oh, well, of course, houseplants make you feel less stressed and, you know, they're a healthy thing to have in your home. And you said to me, or they can cause stress. And actually, I've been thinking about that a lot. And there is that element of it that, you know, for example, when your work kicks off again, who's going to look after all your babies? What happens?
So actually, I have collected or keep plants, certainly in this, my main plants in the house. These can be left. These are watered once every 2 to 3 weeks. That is it. I do nothing else with them. I think you should have plants. You should be able to sit back and enjoy them. So they should be the least amount of work possible. So once every 2 to 3 weeks, I dedicate maybe 3-4 hours to take every pot out of here, line them up, water them, wipe the leaves, take off any dead leaves, do all of that. And then they go back and I enjoy them. Of course, the greenhouse takes a little bit more work, but I can go away for at least a week and leave the greenhouse to look after itself. So I think we absolutely mollycoddle our plants, and we really don't need to. They actually thrive on being left. So I don't stress about that. But when it comes to houseplant collecting, especially new people to houseplants, there is a lot of stress caused by online, which isn't unique to houseplants. It's basically when we're talking about anything online, there is such a vast array of things in front of us that I think people start comparing themselves to things they see there. And certainly during lockdown, when these plants do become people's lives, people really care for them. If something goes wrong with that, or they see someone else's plant online that looks a lot better than theirs, or they can't afford that plant, so it makes them feel really bad. There's a real fine line between the benefits, and of course, gardening, whether it's indoor, outdoor, delivers incredible mental and physical health benefits. But there's also other things that we really need to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. You're sitting in a home that's almost designed for houseplants, whereas majority of us don't have that kind of environment, or we're struggling with light levels, struggling with space. So it's finding the right plant for your home, isn't it? Rather than seeing something and going, oh, I want that. You've got to sort of work backwards, haven't you?
It is absolutely that. I don't have any plants that need to be watered more than once every 2 to 3 weeks in here, because it's just not what I can offer them. Similarly, I don't grow cacti in here, because they need different care to all of these aroids. So it is, you're absolutely right. That's probably the biggest tip that I could give people, is to buy plants that suit your situation. And that's always been in my mind, because I learned everything from outdoor gardening. And that's something that just comes naturally. You would never put a fern in full sun, or you'd never put your tomatoes under a tree. But for some reason, maybe because there's not that history with a lot of people who keep houseplants, people don't see this as a garden. And it is. Your house is a garden when you're keeping plants. So you need to match your plant to where you're going to grow it and the care you can, you know, realistically give it.
I mean, it's like, I would say, choosing a dog, isn't it? You and I are both dog lovers. You've got two little dogs. Fig and Bo, is that right?
Have I got their names
right?
Yeah,
I've got Fig and Bo, yeah.
They're so cute. Fig
and Bo. Mom and daughter.
Very sweet. And I've got a terrier as well. And, you know, some people are suited to terriers, aren't they? They are
characters. Mm. They can be quite
feisty. Other people want to go for longer walks and buy a Dalmatian or something. So it's the same thing, isn't it? You know,
absolutely.
Yeah. So are your dogs, do they leave the plants alone or do they cause any damage?
No, they don't. They're not interested at all. Not at all. When Bo was a puppy in my old house, I did leave her once and I came back and everything was out of its pots because she'd realized that those plastic pots rustle. So brilliant. I came back to soil everywhere. But since then, she hasn't touched it. And Fig, they're just not interested in them at all. Yeah. They like to run around the pots and they play, but they don't touch the plants.
Because it's quite interesting. You know, you always see in a lot of houseplant books, you're toxic to dogs. And I don't know whether we're getting a bit hung up on that. Because like you say, I don't know many dogs. My dog doesn't go anywhere near the houseplants. What's your view? Do you think we need to sort of draw back from anything that might be vaguely poisonous for our pets or not?
I mean, the majority of plants that we keep inside are vaguely poisonous to dogs and people. They really are. There are some which obviously are a lot more, but for instance, I love Diefenbachia. I absolutely love them. And I have two dogs, and Diefenbachia are toxic to dogs and to people. It's called dumb, you know, do you know
why it's
called dumb
cane,
right?
Yeah, you can't speak.
Yeah,
if
of course. Because you can't
on a stem.
I've always been really tempted to try it just to see, but I've
when people get sick of my podcast, they'll be telling me to try it.
Exactly. So I don't know. It's a really difficult question to answer because I wouldn't want to say, oh, it doesn't make a difference. Then someone's dog eats something and has a reaction to it. But I think we shouldn't be afraid of having them in the house. You've just got to be sensible where you have them.
Yeah. Yeah. Gosh. Right. So the other things, I've got a whole list of questions here.
I'm picking your brains. This is just for me, you see, so I have success with my houseplants.
This isn't even going out, is it?
No. This is just personally a houseplant help desk for me. So I told you that I started my career studying houseplants for a year, and then I went to be an interior landscaper, and I kind of fell out of love with them because I was cleaning them in office blocks. It was when people smoked. I spent my life cleaning nicotine off leaves and all sorts. So it's only recently that I've thought I need them back in my life. Now, back in those days, we're talking 20 years ago, we all had those shiny spray cans to shine the leaves. But I mean, now we're all much more eco-friendly. And I wanted to know, do you just literally wipe your leaves with a damp cloth
to get them shiny?
That is all you should do. There are so many products on the market, chemical. There are a lot of natural products with essential oils. There are also a lot of old wives' tales, like things like milk. I would not recommend anything. You don't want to clog the pores of your plant by adding anything onto it. And a lot of the chemicals also strip the natural oils from the plant and make them more susceptible to disease or pests. And there's nothing better than just a wrung out warm microfiber cloth. Just wipe over the leaves and that's all you need to do.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what I do. But I just thought you might have a magic trick up your sleeve.
Unfortunately not.
The other thing that I've read on your Instagram, I might have read it wrongly, is you've said on occasion, I'm going to take this plant for a shower. Do you literally shower your plants or am I getting that wrong?
I don't shower with them.
Okay.
And I don't lather them up, but I do, especially the bigger plants. It's a pain sometimes, or when you've got so many plants, it's such a pain to wipe over every leaf. So every so often, or when a plant's looking a little bit dull, I'll put them in the shower, just a warm shower, and I just I just blast them down and then I leave them in there for an hour or so. And it just, you notice such a big difference. It's cleaned all the dust off the leaves. It's rehydrated every part of them. And then I put them back out and you really, really do notice the difference.
Brilliant. Oh, I'm not going mad then. I did read that. There we are. But that, yeah, I fully understand. You're just creating a tropical rainstorm, aren't you?
Yeah, no, that is exactly what it is. That's absolutely what it is. Because I don't add humidity to my home and I don't spray my plants because it makes them a little bit soft. They end up getting really used to it.
Okay.
So then when I do go away for 2 or 3 weeks with work, which happens a lot when I'm working, then the humidity drops. They're not used to it. They freak out and you come back and you've got half dead plants. So these are used to just being absolutely neglected and they still... If I do say so myself, they still look pretty good.
They do look pretty good. They do.
And when it comes to growing medium, and we're all trying to go peat free, but it's quite difficult to find a good houseplant compost. I've really struggled. I've tried a few. Do you make a mix of your own or use different compost for different plants?
Yeah, I do. I make a mix of my own, which is like my base mix.
Yeah.
And I couldn't tell you exactly the quantities of what goes in it because I do it by feel. I just get my hands in and do it by feel. Mm-hmm. But it tends to have, it's less about what goes in it for me, but more about the texture of it.
Okay.
So I tend to use a couple of different sizes of bark chips. I obviously do this in volume in massive tubs when I do it. I also add in perlite, vermiculite, just a regular compost. I buy the cheapest I can find at the time. I don't use a particular one. And sometimes I'll put some clay balls in if I have them. And it's almost the same as an outdoor soil. If you hold it to what you want it to do is hold together, and then when you touch it, it should be crumbly and break up. That's your that's the soil you want. That's the soil you want outside and the soil you want inside. And it's really just about giving it something moisture retentive but very, very free draining.
Yeah. But what do you think about, there's a big trend of growing houseplants in water, washing all the soil off them and putting them in water. And I'm a bit iffy about that because I just cannot see. I mean, I've got an aquatic plants and I have to give them CO2 every day. So obviously when you, I do, I've got a little squirter. But what do you think about people growing in just water?
Oh, so there's a huge trend. So there's the water trend, and obviously the garden centers sell them and they put them in vases and sell them for a fortune. But then you've also got people growing in lecker and growing in pond.
Yeah.
They're two things which are really, really popular to grow in. So they're basically just a holding medium for the roots. And whether it's in water or lecker, I don't garden with it at all because I see hydroponic growing or semi-hydroponic growing as something temporary. So it gives you rapid growth. It's why why cannabis growers use it and why vegetable growers now use it. It gives you rapid growth, but it's not sustainable. So the plants grow and then they're ready to be harvested and then you clean it all out and start again.
Yeah.
Whereas with house plants, that's just so much effort. And one thing to note, if anyone does do it, if something goes wrong in that environment full of water, you can pretty much say goodbye to your plant because by the time you've noticed it going wrong, the water may have turned rancid or you'll have root rot and it'll be throughout your plant. And it, for me, it's just not worth it. It's appealing to a lot of people because it's clean to have inside and it's easy to set up for someone who doesn't know about plants. But for me, I'd say take a few steps back, get a couple of plants and learn how to grow them in compost.
Yeah. I mean, I think
I grow a lot of my plants in moss.
Do you? What, just literally in moss?
All of the plants in my greenhouse are in pure sphagnum moss.
Wow. Gosh, I've got so much moss here. I'll have to bring you some buckets over, honestly. I've got tons of it. Yeah, you'll have to come and harvest some moss here. Gosh, but I mean, I look at the water plants and I think they look amazing. They're more of a floristry, short-term, wow, sort of a funky thing to do for a dinner party. And then you put your plant back in its warm, cozy compost. But yeah, I thought I'd ask you that because it's becoming something that you see over and over again. And I just think, oh, I don't know about that. But yeah, maybe that's because we're real gardeners and we, you know.
Oh, that is controversial. Ooh, yeah. But I do agree.
Yeah, I
absolutely agree.
Yeah,
with that.
It just feels slightly temporary. Now, the other thing that I don't want to bring up, but I must, is pest and disease. I mean, I personally think that it's not too big a problem with houseplants if you work in, you know, a hygienic way. But what issues have you had?
So pests inside, I'm going to flip that. Pests inside are a much worse problem than outside. Far worse, especially when you have a number of plants.
Okay.
Outside, I would never think of using a chemical. In fact, I don't remember. I've had an outdoor garden, my own allotments, everything for, you know, 15 years maybe of growing outside, maybe even more. And I never once had to treat a pest problem because I just created a balanced ecosystem, filled the garden with wildlife. And that is really what I'm about. But inside,
you can't do
that.
It's
just full on chemical warfare. It really has to be for me. So I have got an ongoing problem with thrips. And they are a complete nightmare because of their life cycle. There's basically continuously new thrips emerging from the soil, and it's really difficult to treat them all. And you're quite limited on what is actually available now when it comes to pesticides.
Yeah.
Initially, I tried a whole load of beneficial insects, and I tried them in my home, I tried them in the greenhouse, and none of them ever worked. Thrips get in either on another houseplant or just when you have your windows open. They're going to find a way in. And people get incredibly stressed when it comes to pests and houseplants and the damage they cause. Maybe it's because outdoor pests don't bother me. I just look at them and I go, all right, I'll keep an eye on that. You know, it'll sort itself out. The plant's nice and big and healthy and established. It'll be fine. But inside, there's no predators in here. There's nothing. There's no rain to wash things off. There's really nothing. And the pests are then left to just, they can just explode.
Take over.
Very, very quickly. Really take over. But the thing I've definitely come to learn, and something I really push, is that pests are not something you probably will ever fully eradicate in your house when you have a lot of plants. It's more about just managing it. And if you fit that into your everyday care, like you're watering and you see it as something that you just have to do rather than something that causes you stress, that's definitely the way forward, I think.
Yeah. Gosh, crikey. I think it's probably because I haven't grown enough of them. And also, when I was in the interior industry, as soon as we saw a pest, we whipped the plant out. It would be, you know, you'd start again. It was that ruthless really in those days, because you couldn't go into an office with a spray can. Everyone would be, you know, what are you doing? So yeah, I've sort of worked in an environment where if it's a pest, you take it out.
But you
very
can't,
clinical.
You can't be like that. Now, really excitingly, really excited about this, because I'm definitely going to be on the list for some, is you've made your own houseplant feed, which is due out fairly soon, isn't it? Tell me about that.
Fairly soon, yeah. I've actually been working on that today. So I've always been fascinated actually with fertilizer. And I remember my first, this is so sad. This is how much of a sad child I was. I remember the first time I noticed fertilizer, and it was in my nana's utility room. And she had this cupboard, and there was on the very top shelf, there was a little tub of baby bio. And to me, because she used to bring it down and it was just a couple of little drops, and then you'd put it in the garden and you'd see then the magic happen, whether it was all down the fertilizer or just the plants growing. But to me, it was magical stuff. And it was also out of reach. So I thought it was really, really magical and special. So I've always been very aware of fertilizers, and also, you know, especially with houseplants, you have to provide them with everything. It's not, you very rarely will top dress indoor plants or, you know, put manure on things.
Don't do that.
Exactly. So I decided a long time ago that I have a list of things I want to do and products that I want to make, not just houseplant things, but everything. I think of things all the time and I write them down. And fertilizer was one of those things. I've never had the time to do it. So when lockdown hit, I had the time. I'm at home with my plants. So I thought, right, let's look into this. So I looked at all of my previous favorite fertilizers, whether that is the results they give or just how easy they are to use or mm-hmm. the smell or just everything. And I looked at all the parts of them that I really liked. And then I also looked at things that I thought we could bring from outdoor gardening to a houseplant fertilizer, really looking at the health of the soil, first of all. Everyone talks about the leaves and the flowers and indoor plants, but the emphasis really should be on your roots, because that's what's going to give you the leaves and the flowers. And for me, it's really about creating a really healthy living ecosystem in your pot, as you would do outside.
Yeah.
And so I had all of these ideas and I wrote them all down, and I even came up with like the NPK that I'd want and everything. And then I started approaching big fertilizer manufacturers, and I found one who doesn't do a houseplant fertilizer. In fact, they don't actually sell any product direct to consumer yet. They do fertilizers for football pitches and okay. for parks and gardens and outdoor things. And I approached them and they said, actually, we're really interested in doing this for you. So I wanted to create something, number one, from complete scratch. And number two, I want to do it on my own, and they were working for me rather than approach a brand and me just be sort of a face of something. So I, you know, had a great conversation with them. They were really excited about it, which is so important. And yeah, then we started coming up with formulas, and then they'd send the formula out and I'd look at the texture, the smell, the usage, how it works on my plants. And the great thing about them is that they have labs and they have chemists, so they can do me a formula and they can tell me that it is going to work because yeah. the science says it will. And then when you're testing it, you're basically just testing how you enjoy using it and how different plants respond to the formula. And we've maybe tweaked the formula about 6 times. And the last one I've been using for about 6 months, maybe. And I love it. And I've sent it out to a few friends of mine who garden in all different ways inside. And I have a fertilizer now, which I'm so unbelievably proud of. And right now, so the fertilizer is ready, the product is ready, it works, it's amazing. But right now I'm working on the packaging.
Yeah.
So today we have just signed off the final packaging, or I've just signed off the final packaging. And I wanted it to be both. So my two main priorities with the fertilizer were that it is, number one, effective, and number two, it's actually just a nice product, because like it looks good. Because a lot of fertilizers, they look very toxic and aggressive. They're bright yellow, or they're bright pink, or they're bright green. And for me, it's a lot less harsh than that. So I created something. I actually worked with an illustrator, and they've illustrated in watercolor a lot of my plants, and they all feature on the packaging.
Fantastic.
And what's it going to be called?
So the brand is Not Another Jungle, which is my Instagram.
Yeah.
And the product is called Superfood.
Excellent. Right. Beauty tonic. Here we go for plants. That's so exciting. So we'll look forward to that. And that'll be available where from?
So absolutely. So website, direct from the website. It will be available through my Instagram as well. And it is also been accepted already by a large number of plant shops around the country and garden centers too. So there will be a list updated when I launch the website. So very, very, very exciting.
Well, that's great. I mean, it's lovely to hear a positive story coming out of lockdown. It sounds like your whole world has been turned into a jungle during this this pandemic. It's been fascinating talking to you. I mean, do you think you'll go back to your photography, I take it, or is this taking over? Could this be a new career?
There's definitely career rumbles in this. There's talks of possible book. There are lots of things, and they're all things that I have discovered that I don't want to do these things. I need to do these things. I need to have more plants. I need to have something more wholesome in my life. And plants and gardening is just that. And what lockdown has made me realize is that was missing in my life. I work in the city and I work with, you know, brands, fashion brands, beauty brands, hair brands in studios, and it seems very glamorous, but actually strip me back and that's absolutely not me. I want to be with pigs, chickens. I want to be hands in the soil, getting dirty, really connecting with things, wildlife. That's what brings me joy, makes me happy. I need a creative outlet. So I absolutely will still be doing my photography. I love my career, but I'm definitely making space in my life to expand my obsession with plants.
Yeah.
And everything that comes with that, whether that be possible TV things, magazine. I love to, you see my Instagram, and although it's quite brief, I love to educate people and teach people how to care for plants and share things. And I'd love to do some more writing. So
exciting.
The world is our oyster. It's really exciting. It really is.
I mean, what's so lovely is you're young, you've got energy, and you've got a real knowledge, which is just, it's great. You tick all the boxes. So well done. Good luck. I can't wait to see what you do next. And I'm dying to come and see your new home one day. Seeing as,
yes,
you know,
absolutely.
If it wasn't for me being your lucky star, you wouldn't have it. So
exactly. I'm going to have to dedicate a border to you, aren't
exactly.
I?
Come on. Well, well, thanks for joining me, and I hope we meet in person soon.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Now, the first thing I want to do after talking to Tony is go and buy more houseplants. I don't think I'll be spending £12,000, though, quite yet. Now, on March the 19th at 6:45, I will be taking over the @CandideUK Twitter account. And I'd love to open up a conversation with you about the value of buying plants mail order. Now, our nurseries can't open at the moment, so let's keep supporting them. Let's share our good news stories, and let's share the wonderful experiences we've had during lockdown of all the great plants that have arrived on our doorstep and have kept us gardening. So until next time, happy gardening.